Hello, and welcome to Baltic Ways, a podcast bringing you interviews and insights from the world of Baltic studies. I'm your host, Dr. Indra Ekmanis. Today, we speak with Dr. Mārtiņš Kaprans. Dr. Kaprans is a senior researcher at the Institute of Philosophy and Sociology at the University of Latvia. Today, we speak about the impact of the war in Ukraine on Russian speakers in Latvia, progress that's been made in overcoming ethnic boundaries, and his experience as a recent recipient of the AABS Saltups Fellowship for Study in the United States. Stay tuned. Dr. Mārtiņš Kaprans, thank you so much for joining us on Baltic Ways. Let's start maybe with you telling us a little bit about your work, your background, and your current research.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for having me. Yes, about my background, I tend to be a social scientist, although my PhD is in communication science, which is more specific subfield of social science, more focusing on communicative practices in society and specifically on mass media. The research that I have been involved over the last 10 years or so has been more sociological and not so much related to conventional understanding of communication science. So therefore, social scientist. That's, I think, the least problematic designation of my status. So I have finished my monograph. The manuscript is finished in Latvian. It's about Latvians in the UK and will be published hopefully in January, which suggests that I have been for a long time involved in migration studies. And indeed, it took something like 8 years with different phases of my field work where I focused on new Latvian migrant community, emerging migrant community, the largest migrant community in the whole world, actually, of the new Latvian migrants in the UK. And I was just curious, since, you know, there is a significant part of those who left the country starting from the early 2000s. Many of them actually are, you know, my generation. I'm part of that generation. And therefore, somehow there is also this kind of emotional a bit attachment. I think it's very important for any researcher to have a bit emotional involvement and subjective justification for your academic interests. Otherwise, it maybe becomes too boring sometimes if you don't have this, you know, personal involvement. But of course, with due respect to you know, all scientific apparatus and with a right distance, but still, it's very important, I think, to have this subjective dimension. But yes, this has been a topic for the last 8 years or so. And simultaneously, at some point, but particularly, somehow it overlapped due to the illegal annexation of Crimea in 2014. That I became more and more involved in research that focused on Russian speakers, Russophones in the Baltics, or even in a broader region. Because initially, my PhD thesis were very much related to memory studies or autobiographical memory work, how people publicly represent, talk about problematic history. In my dissertation, I focused on the Soviet period. And inevitably, of course, I already then came across the ethnic tensions as one of the driving forces or one of the most salient, so to say, problems or issues in terms of public memory in Latvia. Then came Crimea, then came a proxy war in eastern Ukraine, and all other things which we know already as a recent history. And I was actually also very intrigued about what is going to happen, what is happening with Russophones in the region when such a tectonic changes happen here in front of our eyes. So, you know, I became very interested also in this. Somehow formally, ostensibly, it seems unrelated on the one hand, Latvians in the UK and Russophones in the Baltics. But of course, if you take a diasporic perspective, an identity formation perspective, and there are so many similarities that actually it somehow feeds into each other sometimes and helps conceptually also.
Yes, definitely. I think there are a lot of overlaps there. And you mentioned, of course, the current invasion of Ukraine and 2014, the annexation of Crimea. In my work, I've noticed a lot of like international curiosity, right?
especially about Latvia, but about the Baltic states in general, of course, because of these sort of large Russian-speaking or Russophone populations and a lot of media interest in defining the Baltics perhaps as, you know, the next areas or these at-risk regions. And for me, in a lot of ways, it has been important to kind of debunk the idea of a monolithic group of Russian speakers, or, you know, to kind of undermine this conception of these intense sort of tensions that maybe are easy to talk about, but not really happening on a daily basis. And I wonder, what is your assessment of the Russophone population in Latvia right now, and especially after February 24th, and how things have changed or not changed socially or politically?
Yeah, I think there are two questions actually in your question. First, what has happened after February 24th? This is one thing. And then what has happened generally maybe with Russophones in the region over the last decade or maybe last 20 years?
And
it's indeed actually very important to somehow, when I try to answer one of these questions, particularly when I try to answer what has happened after 24th of February, it's very important to take into account those different processes that have predated, that have already, you know, to some extent determined, if you like, the development, and also of the confusion, which we can observe now. That's very kind of media type language I use, confusion, embarrassment. But, you know, somehow you can't avoid in such an affective emotional atmosphere, which we have had here since February 24th, that you can see really, you know, this really very affective, very emotional shifts among Russophones. And therefore, maybe there is this temptation to psychologize their behavior, to speak about embarrassment, anxiety, and some other things, which, of course, also can be used as sociological concepts, but sometimes you see this community as a personality sometimes,
right?
And you want to apply these more psychological concepts to understand what happened. But it is sometimes helpful, actually. There should be some, you know, point of departure when you are in such very uncertain situation, uncertain conditions. We are still in such an uncertainty that is still in there after February. But to answer your question as directly as I can, I think the most important element that we should take into account when we speak about Latvian Russophones, but I would say about the Baltic Russophones, if there is such a group or category at least, is the internal fragmentation.
Yeah.
Internal fragmentation that has disempowered Russophones in political relations as well as in social relations. And therefore, due to this internal fragmentation, it has become severely limited as an, you know, strategic asset, if you look from a Russia's perspective, because you can't mobilize an immobile group or group that is fractured along different lines.
Yeah.
It's not easy. Then you have to really invest a lot of resources to mobilize it initially. So, and what I have also tried to show through my research over the last 5-10 years, let's say, is these different dimensions. It's not only, you know, generational change, and that tells and explains everything. Of course, there is generational change, but it does not explain many things. It explains something, and it should be taken into consideration when we speak about this internal fragmentation that has disempowered the Russophone community, or let's say reframed it at least, and it shouldn't be seen as maybe it was seen in early 2000s. At least it is very problematic to speak about Russophones as a diasporic community in this very essentialist way, because there are many evidences that show that this essentialism at least should be approached in a very differentiated way when we speak about Russophones. And after the Victory Monument in Riga was toppled or was dismantled on August 25th, and that was a very symbolic day, and it has still, you know, lingering this kind of all emotions that were created around this realm of memory in Latvia, and was definitely a building block, a centerpiece of Russophone contemporary identity. And now removing this and seeing that there is no, you know, considerable protest, violence, whatever that could be seen as really a counter, you know, as a response to this, speaking in Burgessian terms, symbolic violence from one side, but really provokes questions, how could it happen so peacefully?
Yeah.
And now I come back to fragmentation.
Yes.
Even if we compare attitude towards ethically sensitive issues such as language, Russian language. In 2004, in Riga, there were very loud and visible protests on the streets of Riga due to first phase of educational reforms that envisaged to increase the role of Latvian language in the education process, which actually very much meant that the role of Latvian language will be strengthened in minority schools.
Yes. And
by that, I understand, of course, Russophone schools in particular. And then there were another phase or amendments done in this education law in 2018, so roughly 14 years later. And while in 2004, we saw this huge crowd, actual pupils, not so much old, but really Russian-speaking pupils on the streets of Riga from different corners of Latvia who came to Riga. And that was a very, that was kind of turmoil. It was a very, explosive atmosphere, if you like, in 2004. And I think Latvian politicians really were kind of a bit afraid and confused of this mobilization
yeah.
that Russophones demonstrated. And then 14 years later, which is a good, time span when you can estimate, has something changed from 2004? And really, in 2018, when the new law actually was adopted, that all schools largely will be teaching or will incrementally turn to the Latvian language as a main language of instruction. There were small, visible protests organized by one particular party, mm-hmm. largely dominated by old, nothing against old people, but you could see inevitably this difference, striking difference between 2004 and 2018. And I like this example actually very much, which somehow illustrates very well that really something has changed also in the attitude towards the most sensitive issue, that is Russian language,
yeah,
and the role of Russian language in this society. So definitely we could see that the temperature of this issue has decreased, and that suggests that that perhaps there are some other elements for Russophone identity which might be more important than being worried about the distinction of language, of Russian language in Latvian public sphere. I think this is very illustrative example, food for thought, what has happened. Because Monument, as I told you, Monument very much is already, is a result of all these developments that we have experienced particularly over the last decade, but more generally speaking, over the last 3 decades since Latvia's historic independence, when you could see, these different steps of, I think Ivar Zijevs has written about militant ethnocracy or something like that. So these different, policy measures that were implemented and then that could be read particularly from some other larger NATO allies, for example, as a militant policy towards Russophones in Latvia. Language and some other things. So I think these measures, these policy measures, together with the other changes that have happened among Russophones, explain why their response to the dismantling this monument, this very symbolic monument in Riga, was so peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, at the same time, of course, explains why Russophones cannot be taken, as you said, as a solid monolithic community.
Yeah, that fragmentation is so important to think about, and I appreciate that kind of illustration of the temperature cooling over the past several decades. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I also wonder, some of your recent work looks at the concept of precarity and like how symbolic and ethnic boundaries are overcome, especially when it comes to people's trust in government, which maybe this is a worldwide phenomenon now, but certainly in Latvia is always kind of quite precarious itself. And
different sources of precarity.
Yeah. Yes. But I wonder if you can kind of speak a little bit about this work too.
Yeah, that's very, very recent research I conducted, actually did some secondary analysis of secondary data. But I was really curious about one very specific question, namely, if there is any alternative source of mobilization, social mobilization, and also political mobilization, this time among Latvian Russophones and ethnic Latvians, but ethnic issues. So I just was curious if there is any other alternative source that could at least give me and some other scholars reason to argue that, you know, we could speak about potential alternative sources of mobilization solidarity. And with this in mind, I took survey data from European Value Study, and I was curious if we can see that leaning or sympathy towards left-wing communitarian ideas, maybe social democratic ideas, could be this alternative source. To what extent it could be an alternative source? Namely, whether this neoliberal precarity or precarity induced by neoliberal order that we can observe both in, you know, in Europe as well as in the United States, and that, as some scholars argue, is one of the main reasons why Trump was elected. Here I wanted to now apply this kind of approach of precarity, which is a still, you know, emerging field, I would say, started in the previous decade by economists, and then it very quickly also was taken by sociologists interested in these clashes and cleavages in society. And by using these data, on the one hand, I actually could prove and could see that this insecurity, socioeconomic insecurity, can be indeed a source of political mobilization that could unite ethnic Latvians and Russophones. And particularly in my research, I combined these different data that account for support for left-wing ideas. And I was interested to what extent they explain support for regime change in Latvia. So not only sympathy, but also kind of a bit causal relations. And I was interested particularly to what extent it can mobilize these both communities or groups with respect to support for autocracy as an alternative to democracy or technocracy, actually. And these data allowed me to do that. And in general, yes, I could conclude that indeed that these data support this hypothesis that sympathy towards left-wing communitarian ideas can mobilize these two communities. But at the same time, that, and I think some scholars who have tried to go in this direction of thinking about Russophones and Latvians as thinking beyond ethnic tensions and trying to find new contexts as disaffection with Latvian democracy, as Timothy Agarin, for example, argues. I think at the same time, you should also see all these potentialities for different mobilization in this previous context, meaning that ethnic relations, particularly ethnocentrism per se, is still a very important factor that determines some other more historical solidarities. And while you can see this potential in precarity as a new source of solidarity, I mean, socioeconomic precarity, not cultural precarity, in this sense. But at the same time, particularly when we speak about ethnic Latvians, we can see that, and here, of course, it depends what kind of methodology you use. I used a multinomial regression analysis, which helps me or gives me an opportunity to, you know, to weight different impacts of different factors. And I can see that ethnocentrism still, you know, exerts a larger impact on Latvians, even though they can be mobilized with this, you know, support for left-wing ideas, but still ethnocentrism, quantitatively speaking, and becomes a stronger mobilizing factor than these kind of, you know, more universalistic and less ethnicized contexts, which does not apply to actually to Russian speakers, to whom indeed non-ethnic issues like socioeconomic precarity might become a very important, is very important mobilizing force, as at least these survey data suggest. So interesting survey for myself, maybe also for some readers. It will be published and then some maybe could argue what I have understood or misunderstood from the survey data. But at least it was interesting to test this hypothesis, which gave me food for thought again that the role of ethnocentrism is still a very important factor, and perhaps it is its role will increase due to the Russian invasion in Ukraine. It has been always here in Latvia that the Russian invasion in Georgia, annexation of Crimea, and now full-scale invasion, it has always increased ethnocentrism among ethnic Latvians, not so much among Russian speakers, actually.
Yeah, that's interesting. And maybe a tangential way to kind of ask about some current events that happened in December, which is the decision by the Latvian media regulator to revoke the license of TV Rain, or Dožd, which is an independent Russian media channel that moved to Latvia following the February invasion of Ukraine to continue broadcasting. There have been a few handful of violations according to Latvian media law, ranging from a failure to provide Latvian language subtitles or voiceovers, as well as some instances of some journalists referring to the Russian army as our army, or implying some solidarity there. So I'd like to ask you about your thoughts on that decision to revoke the license, which has become kind of international news.
That's hot one. Actually, we don't know how to finish, since, as I understand, this TV channel is going to file the court case against the national regulator, media regulator in Latvia. So let's see how this story actually will finish. I'm not a legal expert, but I have read the ruling. I don't know. That is not maybe the best example of shutting down a channel in terms of how the arguments are constructed and how these evidences that are used to justify this decision, how they are interpreted. Generally, I think I agree maybe with those Latvian experts, not only Latvian experts, who argue that perhaps Latvia was not simply ready for being a shelter to these different liberally minded Russian language media journalists. I think this is really not a very good signal to the international community. I mean, from Latvian side, because it is Latvia is seen as a place that, on the one hand, of course, is very committed to protect its public space, and yeah, and committed to be in the same line everywhere and always with Ukraine. Mm-hmm. That's fine, very good. I have nothing to complain about that. But on the other side, a TV channel that has arrived here just half a year ago, and maybe has not got used to these local rules of new game. So I think simply internationally does not look well. Mm-hmm. How Latvia or Latvia's regulator has behaved, particularly when you see that these arguments, reasons for taking such a decision are not really compelling, I would say. There might be more serious reasons actually for such sharp decisions, I think.
Yeah, a complicated situation for sure. I wonder, in the time that we have left, if you can share a little bit with us about your time as an AAPS Saltups Fellow at the University of California, Berkeley.
I was just last Friday, I met a very good friend of mine. He asked me also, how was it? And I somehow spontaneously expressed the right words, how I see and how I feel about this opportunity that was provided by Saltup Scholarship. It was a really very good intellectual retreat. But intellectual retreat meaning that I had a time to think, to write, to go, to attend the library archives. I was at Hoover Archives. I was at the different libraries in Berkeley as well as in Stanford. What is interesting, I also gave several talks over my stay in the United States in California. So I gave one presentation that was quite well attended at the Institute of Eastern European and Slavic Studies at the University of California, Berkeley. And then some Latvians incognito came to my presentation and invited me to have another talk, this time in Latvian, in San Francisco, that I enjoyed very much. I talked something about what we talk now, about the impact of Russian invasion on Latvian response, and many interesting questions. And then, you know, the chain reaction emerged. And I went to, due to startup scholarship, I also went to AC's conference convention in Chicago. And here again, active Latvians from Chicago invited me to have another talk. And I gave another talk in Chicago. Enjoyed again. Many people, many interesting, challenging questions. So really, I am intellectual retreat. By retreat, meaning a very dynamic 5 weeks in the States. Yes. So I'm really grateful. I'm really, really grateful for this chance.
Yes, that's great to be able to snowball into many more events. Yeah. Well, Dr. Kapranc, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. Thank you for a really fascinating discussion. It's always a pleasure to hear your thoughts. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Indra.
Thank you for tuning in to Baltic Ways, a podcast from the Association for the Advancement of Baltic Studies, produced in partnership with the Baltic Initiative at the Foreign Policy Research Institute. A note that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of AABS or FPRI. I'm your host, Dr. Indra Ekmanis. Subscribe to our newsletters at aabs-balticstudies.org and fpri.org/baltic-initiative for more from the world of Baltic studies. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.